What's up? Welcome to the Most High Show. My name is Christian, and I will be your host as David is on sabbatical in Puerto Rico, living that life. Today, we have a cool show today. Leslie's here with a mystic moment. She's been bringing the heat on the mystic moment. And a friend of the show and organization goes way back, but it's been a long time since he's cracked a mic with us. Mitchell Thomas Wilson. And I'm looking forward to it. We're going to talk about chop wood, carry water. We're going to talk about some of the things that's going on. And we'll see where it goes. But looking forward to it. Thank you for joining. And this is the Most High Show.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
All right, we're back. We're back. So today, bringing that heat, that mystic moment heat, is my wife. My wife, Leslie. We just celebrated an anniversary, 19 years married.
19 years.
Yeah, it's pretty significant. It's a big deal. So what's your mystic moment about, other than your undying love for me?
You. Okay, so I was thinking about this slogan, or this phrase, right? Most people know this in the recovery like space. It's called let go, let God, right? Mm. Yes. And so I guess as someone who's not in recovery, that means something else. That means let go and I guess surrender, right? And then live the purpose of God or something like that. That's in, you know, who are Jesus followers, right? But in the recovery world, right, I learned that in, can I say it?
Sure.
In Al-Anon meetings. And letting go, or let go, let God. And that just clicked. Like, that was like an answer for me.
Wow.
Because I didn't know how to, you know, so letting go and let go and let God is to, what does it say here? I don't want to mess it up because it's a very important phrase. And because in Al-Anon is different from what I think it is, of what it means to us than what it means to you guys, you know?
Okay.
So the slogan let go and let God helps us to let go of trying to control things and people that we cannot control. When our attempts at control are not working, when we feel we have run out of options, when we don't know what we can do, the slogan helps us to trust that a power greater than ourselves will help us when the time is right. The slogan gives us permission to replace stress, worry, and suffering with serenity and faith.
Yeah.
So you were just getting out of rehab and I had no clue, you know, what was gonna happen. But I think that phrase helped me to just, you know, be, you know, knowing that God is there and present and that he is going to help me through, you know, the process of you being in recovery. And it was hard. It was hard. But I think, you know, those meetings and those groups, like, helped me to just understand about addiction and understand what to do, you know, in cases of, you know.
Like what? Like, what was hard about it?
What was hard about you being in early recovery? Yeah. Yeah. It was, you know, I think that, I don't know, you were learning a lot of things about being in that space of not using, right?
Yeah.
And so a lot of the triggers, right?
Wow.
And then also just the behaviors, right? You had like this anger that you were trying to kind of understand what that was, and stress too, not, you know, being at work. You were still working at a high, you know, like a stressful job you were in. And so, so you were trying to balance everything out after recovering, going home. And so I think that was just a lot, you know? Yeah. And for me, I just kind of, the way I would have handled it, if I didn't know that slogan, I would have been mad at you, angry at you, and been more aggressive towards you, and you're not doing the things that you should be doing. You know, like I would expectations of you being sober
right.
is you being like this angel, you know, and you being this, like, you're not ever going to be mad. You're not ever going to, you know, so,
right.
So it's a process.
That expectation got blew up pretty quick.
And it's still a process too, right? Because, you know, as a married couple, there are things that are going to just come up and it is going to, you know, get some tension. And so, and how to deal with that is, you know, part of that is in recovery. And for you guys, I mean, I don't want to say it, but I think it's for like shame and guilt or something like that to let go and surrender or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds a lot like how I would use that term, right? And that's also like is that a platitude? It's like kind of like a, you know, it's a saying, an anecdotal saying that people say to you, let go, let God. And it's just like, oh my gosh, really? You know, like, don't you know I'm like trying to kick drugs, or I'm trying to like balance my checkbook or deal with all the money I blew for the last 10 years, and you just want me to let go and let God? That doesn't work. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
And so, but I do think that it's a valuable, I think as I've continued, I have maybe come to a deeper understanding of it. Mm-hmm. Definitely not the deepest understanding of it, but there's still, cause I still feel like I'll be this 100% honest, that sometimes I'm like, yo, I ain't letting no more shit go. You know, like I let that go. Okay, I let that go. I let this go. Now you want me to let this go, right? And whatever it could be an idea I have about who I think I should be, or how I think you should be, or how I think others should be. It's the same situation, right?
Right.
And it's like I feel like, oh, I let it go on one level, and now here I am being put in a position where it's like the obvious solution is to let go again. Right.
Well, see, when you're talking about let go in your terms, it's things or
it could be thought process. Uh-huh. It could be emotions.
Okay.
It can be my version of reality, right? Mm-hmm. Which I have and I can cling very tightly to. No, this is the way it is, right? Mm-hmm. And so I don't have to, but I've found that when I let that go. Right. There's a line that says my serenity is in direct proportion to my acceptance. My level of acceptance controls my level of serenity. So the more that I'm willing, able to accept the way things are, right, for what they are, then my level of serenity is proportional to that. So the more I can accept, the more I let go, the more serenity I have. And the longer I stay sober, that's the kind of the primary thing I'm looking for. I want serenity. I want peace. I want to feel like it is as it should be. So this let go, let God thing is, I mean, man, that's, talk to anybody, any human.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's a tough thing.
To me, I don't think it's tough. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, okay, God, I'm giving him to you. I'm just kidding. I don't know. It's just, you know,
is that your
for me,
Asian
it's just
privilege?
Prayers.
Is that why you?
No, I think it's prayer. You know, just I guess in my prayer, my thoughts, it's like, okay, I just ponder about it, and I don't like if it was like $1 million, then like I'd be like, yeah, no, that's hard to let go. But you know, to I guess my faults. You know, and just thinking about like what did I do to hurt you or someone, or, you know, and yeah, it was hard for me to say sorry at first, but I think I'm working on it.
Yeah, I've probably heard like two sorries this year. That's pretty amazing.
Yes.
Two of them. Genuines. And not like, I'm sorry you feel that way, but like, I'm sorry I did something that affected you.
Yeah.
So Mitchell's sitting over here very stoically.
He's like, oh gosh.
And I can see the wheels of his brain, and he's about to drop the hammer.
Oh, I would love to hear from him.
What do you have to say about this saying, this mystic moment of let go, let God?
I have no idea what's going on, but what I do know is the pain and the beauty come like waves, and just when it feels like everything's going great, you get hit with a wave of pain, at least in my world. And so while I don't claim to understand this whole God concept, I've subscribed to prayer and meditation over the last 11 years, and I can't explain it, but it's been helpful. So I keep going back to it, and I don't get too far from it. So when I say let go and let God, I'm thinking G-O-D is good orderly direction, and I try and lean into that because it's not really my nature.
Mm-hmm.
And my nature puts me in all types of dangerous positions, doing dangerous things, and I'm trying to do less of those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aja says, it's hard for me to say sorry as well, working on it day by day.
Yeah, Aja.
It's a joke amongst married men that women don't say sorry. I don't know if you know that, but it exists.
Because we're always right. That's why.
So you're saying prayer meditation is a pathway for you in a level of acceptance and surrender and letting go.
What I'm saying is prayer and meditation seems to be like breaking a levee that releases the pressure that has historically not led to great outcomes.
Yeah.
So that's the way I visualize it.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's very good, Leslie. Thank you for the mystic moment.
Of course.
Let go, let God. Mm-hmm. Put that on a bumper sticker and watch the eyes roll. So we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back with the seat of service, the decadent seat of service. Mitchell is going to be talking a little bit about what he's doing, about this documentary, and just his experience, strength, and hope. So it's coming up.
There is a phrase that says it is better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war. And I feel like I'm a vet from a war zone, and I feel very comfortable being in the garden, knowing that this is the best place for me. But under extreme circumstances, the warrior can return if necessary, and hopefully that never has to happen.
Montana Society. An inspiring docu-series about a group of addicts who endeavor to repurpose an underground nuclear bunker in Paradise Valley, Montana. Along the way, they learn to work together under the wild leadership of Dean, a financial guru and outdoorsman who has his money on the line. In the end, will they learn to repurpose their pain and the bunker into something new and wonderful? Find out on this season of the Montana Society.
All right, so Mitchell, thank you for being here. So before we dive into Mitchell, let me just tell a little bit. So when we started the Most High Show, I was on the top bunk of a spiritual retreat, and I was, you know, yelling at God, cursing at God in my head and heart. And I had this dialogue, right? Imagined or real, whatever. It was, oh, I can't give you what you want. You don't know what you want. And I said, oh, okay, well, what I want? And I wrote out the idea for the show, the Most High Show. And I was going to interview people and their transformed stories with Jesus. And then I was going to play Christian music, but like Christian artists, not like contemporary Christian music, right? Because at the time I was listening to all these like underground Christian artists who were making really beautiful music that was not necessarily like contemporary and what you would normally hear, you know? And so that was the initial idea. And quite honestly, what happened was I had a hard time finding a lot of transformational stories, right? From people who had an encounter with Jesus. And as such is the way the Lord leads, Mitchell and I crossed path through a mutual friend, which was another weird circumstance. And then Mitchell was like, well, I know some people who would want to be interviewed, right? And they weren't necessarily people who had this interaction with what people would call, say, the, you know, quote unquote, Jesus transformation, right? I now think it is. It's just Jesus ain't tripping on the name. Anyway, I digress. So we started doing these stories with people who had freedom from addiction. And then then Mitchell was like, well, let's do this, let's do that. And so, and also when I share my story, I always share about this guy who told me that I should start going back to meetings and working the steps. And in my head, I didn't tell it to him, but in my head, I was like, F you, bro. I've worked the steps. Like, who you, right? This is a few years into my sobriety. But, you know, he was right.
Why is that? Because of ego?
Ego, yeah. Oh. You know, if somebody tells you something true about you and it pisses you off, it's probably because it's really true, right?
Okay.
So that's what was happening. And so I did that. And I started going back to meetings. I started getting a sponsor, started working back through steps and stuff like that. And so that was key. So that is my introduction of Mitchell Thomas Wilson. Mitchell. Welcome to the show, Mitchell.
And at that time, Mitchell had long, curly hair.
Oh, yes.
Long locks.
Long
so
locks.
So pretty, yeah.
Like Jesus.
Like Jesus.
Like Jesus. So yeah. I had somebody recently ask me when I sent them an invite to this event for Chopwood Carry Water screening. They're like, is this a religious thing? And I was like, no. A lot of us, you know, do pray and meditate and have different types of faith. But as I was thinking on it a bit, I think people can get turned off by religion.
Yeah.
And so my best explanation for people when it comes to recovery and spirituality is, you know, we're all trying to get to the top of this mountain, so to speak. And Christianity is certainly one of the paths that seems to work for some people, but there are countless paths. And I've been humbled by how many different paths I've seen, from people getting into yoga to rock climbing, you know, whatever it is that gets them feeling connected, do that.
Yeah.
Whatever it is that gets you to do less of what you were doing to hurt yourself and other people,
do that.
That can be good orderly direction. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't spend much time in churches, but, you know, I found my own church in the wilderness, if you will, at times. And that works really well for me, just being around trees and having some quiet nature moments by myself.
Yeah.
So I keep doing that.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing is, the word religion means to bind together, right? And it's taken on a very negative context in our culture today, right? But the idea of religion is it's a human characteristic and human trait. Humans bind together over things all the time, whether it be political ideology, whether it be geographical location, whether it be similar interests, right? So the concept of religion is to bind together, right? And anytime you get a collective consciousness and you get a bunch of people gathering together, all looking towards the same direction, right? Or the same ideology or the same God, right? Mm-hmm. There's something that's happening there, right? And that's always interesting to me, because by definition, It is religious, but not by the definition of what maybe someone might mean when they say, is this religious, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
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 I mean, because, you know, at one point in time, I was confused about God or religion, you know, and this is a question, right? Why do you believe in religion if it's going to cause war, right? It does cause war from different religions because their belief is disbelief and they, and one wants to be, I guess, higher.
Right,
yeah. Higher than the other.
My ways are better than your ways. My God could beat your God's ass.
Right, yes. Right. So then that whole concept of that is very, you know, I guess, I don't want to say atheism, but I don't know. When you sat down with me and just kind of talked to me. You talked to me about it. You didn't convert me. I just kind of understood through the years and it's I guess, you know, God and war. I mean, religion and war. It's not necessarily.
Yeah, it's pretty synonymous.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and you know what's interesting is if you don't get to hear people talk about you, I do. But what I hear, what's a really common theme is that Mitchell is the most giving and generous and always going to be there kind of guy. Like you're the kind of, if you're not the emergency, in case of emergency contact, you're like right next to that, right? And to me, that is the most, you know, a spiritual way to live and that people look at you and see you in that light. And I know that, you know, you're in the trenches and you might not always get to reflect that back to yourself.
Most of what I hear is that in the business world, I'm potentially quite the opposite.
Yeah.
So there's a balance there. And I think for the people that are close to me, they see that I'm very ambitious in the business world so that I can be that giving, generous person to the people who I think need it.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's rewind the clock back. So the first thing that we did together, aside from these podcasts, one of the things we did was a documentary called Megan's Prayer. And that's kind of like one of our more popular, a friend of mine, James, called it the crown jewel in the Most High crown. Tell me about, because we also did, recently did another documentary and we're looking to do probably more, but tell me about Megan's Prayer, how that came about, because that was really the first one. I think we might have done From Prisoner to Pastor before that. Pastor
but
Mike
we didn't
in Bakersfield.
Even think of it as a documentary. It was just
We thought of it more like a vlog kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But this one we approached like a documentary. So tell me, when that vision came to you, and you have a very intuitive nature to you, what was it, and why did you connect those dots to say, hey, we need to film this and make something?
So one of my practices is to seek counsel when I don't know which way to turn and keep my eye open for what I call trail markers. And there will be times, sometimes I get the chills when something seems significant. It's to the point where sometimes I write them down now because there will just be these moments where I know in my heart I'm in the right place doing the right thing, even though I might be coming out of a dark tunnel where I was second guessing everything around me. Hmm. And that'll happen to me sometimes once a quarter, sometimes once a month. And so Megan's Prayer was one of those during the time where that was being formulated as an idea. It really was just me turning to people that had really given me great advice and suggestions over the years, and I was dealing with what I perceived to be a crisis with this woman who was the mother to one of my friends who had passed away, and she shared with me something that felt very scary. Like she wasn't going to be around for much longer. And if you read between the lines there, that's not really something that I was trained to deal with. So I called some people, and luckily I reached out to a mentor, and he said he was privy to what we were doing with Most High Media. He said, get her involved with Most High Media. So I said, okay, there's my trail marker. That's what I'm going to do. So I don't know exactly how it worked, but through a couple conversations, it became pretty clear that the best way to get the parent of someone who had lost their child to addiction would be to get them involved in some kind of memory related, I don't want to call it a devotion, but
it's like the cathartic experience of sharing her story.
Right. Yeah. I'm at a loss for words for this one, but basically we wanted to share something in her memory and dedicate it to her and do it in a way where there could be some healing and some building of community. So we came up with this idea because one of her journals that I had from cleaning out her apartment had this prayer in it. And that was probably your idea to call it Megan's Prayer. And I think that was brilliant. And so through the process, somehow, some way, I don't know if we had a lot to do with it or not, but it certainly didn't hurt.
Yeah.
We got to see this very special lady go through the healing process, and no longer were the conversations about going into the darkness. They were about healing and going into the light.
Yeah. There's something very powerful about sharing your story in a in like a medium like film, or you know, like this TV or whatever, because it's kind of like it gets out there in the cosmos, and you know it's out there. And so it on a, even if on a subconscious level, you know that your pain is given purpose, then that's, it might be helping somebody. I remember taking her to a couple of our screenings at, I think we did Black Bear Lodge. We did a couple like, and she came.
Oh, she, I didn't know she went.
Yes.
Okay.
And they were, I mean, it was like pretty powerful experiences. Mm-hmm. And I guess she got to see that too. She got to see people being affected by this. And so the film talks about addiction and mental illness, or what they call co-occurring disorder, mm-hmm. and suicidality, how those three correlate. And we've got it told from very different perspectives. And it's been a pretty powerful film to screen and mm-hmm. for people to watch. And especially when she was showing up to the screenings, it was like people were like, oh, because it was like she was this mother figure for the men and women in these centers. And they were just, and when you would, my first question was always like, it was always hard transition from that film to a group, you know, yeah. conversation. But my first question was like, who here has either thought about or attempted suicide? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I would say like 90% of the room would raise their hand, right? In a room full of people who are trying to recover. And it was pretty powerful. And it fell together. It kind of made itself. I just had to put the pieces.
Yeah, I think her voice was also a healing to every mother out there who experienced that, you know? And you know, I mean, a lot of moms don't want to share or just want to be alone, isolate. And I think that she, for her to just voice that out there on a documentary, on a screening, is, you know, is a piece of their, I think, minds and their hearts that, okay, I'm okay. Like, you know, I'm not the only one. And yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we rocked that and we did that.
And it's still going on. It's at Most High Media app.
Yep, you can still watch that on the app.
Mm-hmm.
And we continued doing shows for a while with them, but then you kind of moved and we kind of haven't been doing a lot of content together lately. But we talk every day, Mitchell. Mitchell is my accountability buddy.
Yes.
And I his. So it's really cool to have you here. But we came up, you've had this idea for this kind of follow-up film, which we did produce. And before we get into it, I want to read, I should probably have Jeff read it because he read it in the documentary. You want to read it?
You got it, bro.
Okay. All right. So Jeff has become the unofficial voice of Most High Media documentaries. He's so gracious about it. All right. So this is the story that we tell in the beginning of this documentary. A young boy became a monk. He dreamed of enlightenment and learning great things. When he got to the monastery, he was told that each morning he had to chop wood for the monks' fires and carry water to the monastery for ablutions and the kitchen. He attended prayers and meditation, but the teaching he was given was rather sparse. One day he was told to take some tea to the abbot in his chambers. He did so, and the abbot saw that he looked so sad and asked him why. He replied, "Every day, all I do is chop wood and carry water. I want to learn. I want to understand things. I want to be great one day, like you." The abbot gestured to the scrolls on the shelves lining the wall, and he said, "When I started, I was like you. Every day, I would chop wood and carry water. Like you, I understood that someone had to do these things. But like you, I wanted to move forward. Eventually, I did. I read all the scrolls. I met with kings and gave counsel. I became the abbot. Now I understand that the key to everything is that it is all chopping wood and carrying water. And if one does everything mindfully, then it is all the same." So when I read that, what comes up for you, Mitchell, and also want to hear from Leslie?
Well, to be quite frank, what comes to mind to me is how wonderful to be enlightened, and I would love to know what that's like. I think it's really easy for us to share the progress and the beauty, but I think it's really important that we share whatever darkness we still interact with. And so, you know, just today I found out one of my childhood best friends died. And so I'm not going to sit here and pretend that, you know, I completely embrace that story at the moment, because right now, you know, it doesn't feel very enlightening to be seeing yet another person die. So that being said, I do think having these spiritual practices to revisit when we're lost is vital. And so I do find myself chopping wood literally and metaphorically, and both carrying water to the animals literally and metaphorically at times. There's a whole list of things that I don't want to do. And I know that to get to that next bright spot, I've got to do these things. I get to do these things. And a lot of people that have been in my position don't have that luxury. So that's motivating for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Leslie, what about for you? Chop wood.
Carry water.
Carry water.
Same thing with Mitchell. I think to me, it's more like, you know, you compare yourself to others, you know, and then people are like, you know, good, and they have everything, and they're not worried about financial stuff, and you know, and so I mean, all of that stuff, and you compare yourself, and you want to be there, and you want to be the top, and you want to be good, you want to be the best, and so the chopping wood and carry water is just to be humble where you are. And just know that you don't know what your path is going to be like, or you don't know what the future is going to be. You could be the top, or you could be staying at the same place where you are, but that's, I don't think that's going to happen. But where you are, and just keep at it, and just have that discipline, and just be humble, and just know that, you know, I guess being present and not to look, you know, like what he did was, I want to be that, but then he couldn't. That time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, like, for me, when I think of it, I don't think I'm very good at that, chop wood, carry water, because, you know, part of, like, my nature is to create and to manifest and to, you know, manifest things that don't exist to making them exist as a creative person. Like, you know, I start with a blank canvas and I draw something, or we start with a concept for a film and then it doesn't exist. And then all of a sudden it exists because we went out and we filmed and we edited and we put music and did all this stuff. And so, it's something to that I guess preaches to me every day, right? This concept of, you know, it's all chopping wood, carry water. It's all like when you get to that point, it doesn't matter whether you're literally chopping wood or whether you're editing or whatever. If you're able to be mindful, you realize, I guess for me, I realize that I'm not the thing I'm doing, right? That I am separate. I am the one that's doing the thing, not you. Does that make sense?
You are doing what you're doing.
But. Right. But like I can become attached so much to what I do. Mm. It's like, you know, you're at a party and talking to people. Well, what do you do? Right. And it's like, well, I don't answer that. What do I do? Right. But we associate people with what they do. Oh, so you're a banker. So you must be, that's who you are. Mm-hmm. Well, it's like, no, that's what I do. I am an individual that I do. And so for me, that's where I go with it. Chop wood, carry water. And I think about that I am the me that's doing these things. I am not the things that I'm doing. And I'm much more than that one thing. Because I can shift. Like yesterday we were, you know, I was editing film. We sat and ministered to a mother who's having trouble with her children. Mm-hmm. Then I filmed something and then I went and did a group with Dean. Right. And so I kind of shifted these gears. And so if you would have asked me what I do on any point in that day, you would have got a very different. I was a minister for a couple hours. You know, then I was an editor for a couple more hours. You know what I mean? So it's mm-hmm. like, that's how, that's for me, that's what I do. That's what my mind, my magnificent magnifying mind will latch to these identities and go, that's who I am. Or I want to be more this guy. So chop wood, carry water is like a simplified, like it's all chopping wood and carrying water for right. me. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So let's lead us to the film. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you experienced today, or do you want to move on to the film?
Oh no, we can move on to the film. I shared what I needed to share.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you talking about that because that's the reality.
That's why we got the Narcan here, just to remind people that if you don't have it,
yeah,
you probably should get some. I believe we may even be able to offer them at our upcoming event.
Yeah. And that's becoming more and more where we need that shit on deck more and more.
That is a good idea because, we do have more of those, and to distribute those to the ones. I mean, I think to me, like families, schools, recreation. I mean, everything where families, I mean, people in their homes should have this because it's just more apparent that nowadays, you know, someone you know or someone, a friend has died of overdose, and you know, and it's now that one drug that's being, you know, just over and over again talked about is the fentanyl crisis. So
yeah. So what is Narcan for people that might not be familiar?
Yeah.
Oh, so would you like me to do a commercial?
I think you need to explain it.
What we have here, and also, the reason why I can do this pitch is because we did this pitch. We actually were on the phone with them a couple years ago. We interviewed Dave Loss.
That's right.
And he was one of the first people to get this. And he was also one of the people who helped implement the Good Samaritan Law in Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is where you can intervene and implement something like this. So Narcan is a nasal spray that if somebody's unresponsive, laid out, and you don't know what substance they've taken, this nasal spray, you can just, as simple as you just put in their nose and spray like you would any kind of nasal spray. And it's an opioid receptor blocker. So it blocks the receptors in your brain from receiving the opioid. So it'll knock someone out of their high, and it also knocks them out of an overdose. The cool thing is, doesn't matter what if they're passed out from drinking or from Xanax, this won't help them, but it also won't hurt them.
Oh, okay, that's what I had a question about. Yeah.
So it won't. So it's not like this is going to, you know. Also, be aware if you ever have to snap someone out of their overdose with one of these, mm-hmm. or a couple of these, they're going to be really mad because it completely kills the high that they've been fighting to get. There's another one that came out that I don't know the name of, but I'll just mention that that is this is a 4 milligram version. That's Narcan. There's another one that's an 8 milligram because of the strength of fentanyl that they have another one that they're trying to distribute.
Wow.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of people getting these out. And I mean, there's Narcan, free Narcan dispensary units, and some states have them set up. There's, you know, all EMTs have a version of this or a needle, and they're trying to make sure that all police officers are carrying them, that they're available in schools, because you never know. That's
why
how.
Why aren't they not at schools? They're not at schools.
No, but this is how many people are actually dying from this opiate overdose. That we're going, hey, this needs to be everywhere.
Right.
That's how wild, you know, it is. That's the rate of which people are dying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this one was given to us from Realtors for Recovery.
Thank you.
Yeah. Jennifer Hodge.
Yeah.
Gave this to Restoration Rotary. We did a couple distribution projects in downtown Atlanta. And so we have some here that we kind of distribute case by case.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the cool thing about what we did when we finished, and also with this event, and then we'll wrap up. So we wanted to do some sort of follow-up. You really wanted to do a follow-up for Megan's Prayer that was maybe a little
more uplifting.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it definitely is. Mm-hmm. So again, your intuition's kicking in. How does that come about? What gives you this thought? And you're like, let's do this.
Since we produced Megan's Prayer, I found that having this piece of content to share with people that I meet has been helping facilitate some really important connections. And I think it has really helped some people in my community gain a better understanding of why I do what I do, how I do what I do, or at least, you know, some of the background that got me where I am. And I feel like over many years I've been very misunderstood, and that's okay. But I felt like to help the maximum number of people, I need more people to understand where I'm coming from and why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I started to realize that a dark subject like suicide and addiction was not always palatable for the people that I was trying to connect with. So it certainly has been really impactful for certain people. Other people,
yeah,
they're just not either ready for that. They're not in a place where they need that. And so I had to start telling people, this is not going to be pleasant for you to watch.
Right. It's kind of a bummer conversation.
So I felt like that needed to be a volume in the library for appropriate audiences, but I felt like I needed something that was for everybody.
Yeah.
Or at least something that was more easily digestible for the masses. And so it made perfect sense to me, because I've been doing this disability work for about a decade, that we could not highlight a tragedy, but highlight some success stories, both in the disability community and show how folks in recovery that have managed to defy the odds, if you will, and not become a statistic, how they're doing that.
Yeah.
And my company has allowed for me to combine those paths in a way that's been really meaningful to me and the people around me. And so it just made sense to me that we should bring one of my favorite people, or a couple, a handful of my favorite people together, and tell a cool story about firewood that is arguably the least lucrative enterprise I've ever participated in, laughably so. But the fact that it's so important to us, I think, really helps share that message of community, and shows that a business can, without being a nonprofit, do a lot of good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we got Charles involved, And Charles is someone that you've been working with. And we have Tully's in there. Tully's kind of shared his story on our show before. We got your pops in there. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of my favorite part, actually. And we got your animals in there.
Charles' parents
are mm-hmm. in there.
Yeah.
And so Charles is someone, he has a thing called cocaine syndrome.
I believe it's cocaine.
Cocaine syndrome. I just don't like to say that word. It sounds too much like cocaine. But it's a serious, it's very rare, but it's a serious condition. Mm-hmm. And Charles is, anyone who meets him and talks to him, and this is what's cool about this film, is you get to kind of get a little peek in what it's like to hang out with Charles, you know. Mm-hmm. He's a very uplifting, very unassuming,
very sweet,
mm-hmm. very fun guy, and that we get to capture that and what that's like. And we also get to see how that interacts and how he interacts in the TLC community and chopping wood and stacking wood and selling firewood and doing all this and ride around in go-karts around Serenby like madmen. Yeah.
What I like about the documentary is that it shows, you know, that it shows the stigma of addiction, right? That in recovery, you know, you are doing good and you are helping the community and, you know, this is who I am. And the misunderstanding that the community gets when people say, oh, you're in recovery or you're sober, they think of the bad things first.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And then, oh, what can he do in this community? What is he going to do? You know, what is he capable of? You know,
right.
And then also, and his business, TLC is also helping the community of disabilities where people don't want to deal with that because, you know, they don't know how to serve that community, you know, and they don't know how to, I guess, help families who do have, you know, kids or whoever has disability and how. So then their community, their business is helping the family and the people who are in disability. And I think that's so awesome because there's recovery and then there's a community of disabilities coming in together and just helping families and disability and the recovery, because you're also hiring people in recovery doing the business too as well. So you're like all in one whole, like, you know, I think it's an awesome business.
So full disclosure, not everybody we hire is in recovery.
Okay, sorry, but some people, yes.
But absolutely, yes. I take the opportunity to help a few populations. So
yes.
I would like to hire more people with special needs so far.
Yeah.
That has not been as easy as I would have hoped, but it has been a lot easier to find people who are trying to get their lives together and have substance abuse backgrounds and bring them to a healthy place where they can get away from certain enterprises, like the restaurant industry are just notorious for being places where people use drugs on the job.
Mm-hmm.
And so the one thing I can definitely provide my guys is a place where that's not gonna happen openly. And I'm pretty sure we've been really successful at that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and not only that, but you're creating the environment of, you know, authenticity and transparency, because that's kind of how you live, and you're not shying away from tough conversations, and or, you know, you're not kind of like, and I think like that was one thing I noticed when I went to treatment, you know, 11 years ago, that I remember the counselor saying, if more companies did this with their employees, if more companies like supported their employees and their needs kind of outside the job hours, that we would probably have a lot more people in long-term recovery, because I came out of treatment into a job that was supportive and had paid for me to go to treatment and had kept my position open. And when I came back, they were aware and they were supportive of that whole thing. And so that gave me really a good solid ground to begin to build back up in. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think more employers that are acknowledging that this is a significant portion of our population, like it or not, that people are in a variant of degrees, right? Maybe it'd be mental health, right? Or substance abuse or whatever. Mm-hmm. If you can find a way to rally and support individuals, I think you get a better employee, but you also get a better, well-rounded human that's able to, you know, maybe carry on the message and then in turn can help somebody else, mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So we did this documentary. We've been screening it at some places. And I don't think you were at the one we did. And I'll share one. Somebody's feedback was, I'm not going to get emotional about it, but he was like, he was in treatment now, right? So he hasn't seen his child in a long time. But his child was severely autistic, mm-hmm. right? And that's not represented in the film. But he drew a connection, and he shared about how tough that was and how selfish he was, that he wanted his child to not be that way, and he never really accepted it. And it was really touching to hear him share that he was able to connect those two dots, right?
Right.
And that's the thing about these films and the screenings that we do, is that it's a really unique way to creatively address really tough things, right? And have these conversations. And so we've been doing them in a lot of recovery communities, but we're about to do that for kind of for the community at large in Serenbe. And this was your idea again. Mitchell's just got all these great ideas.
Mitchell.
He's like in the background, dude.
Well, I think the important part of this conversation is that early on when I started working with people with special needs, I remember when it hit me first, there was one day I was having a rough time getting up, and this young lady who I was job coaching, she's in a wheelchair, she called me at some ungodly hour, excited to make sure that I was going to be there to teach her how to roll silverware. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here struggling, and you know, she's got struggles, at least from my perspective, that I can't even imagine, and is excited to do things that I wouldn't want to do. And that was really a humbling perspective that I've leaned into, because I continue to try and help people who inspire me, and Charles does that.
Yeah.
So I want other people to be inspired, and so I figured allowing him to share a little bit about what he loves to do and share how we want to support that could either allow for us to do these documentaries with other people that inspire us, or I would really like to do more with Charles if he wants to do some more. I think his story has quite a bit more to it that could really inspire a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful that this process could self-perpetuate, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're doing a screening, and it's we're inviting special guests from Serenbe and at large. We've invited some people to show up, mm-hmm. and get to experience this and get to see it. And we're looking forward to that.
How many RSVPs do you have?
We have 82 out of 100.
What?
Yeah.
No way. So, okay, you guys have to be like very specific with this event that you... I would say mainly Mitchell, thank you, and Christian, planning this event. So it's at Cherry Hollow Farms, right, where you got married. I love that place. So you guys plan this event to do a fundraising for Most High as well, and then also as well for Charles too, right?
Well,
for the chair.
We want him to be able to share what he participated in with the community.
Okay.
And no nonprofit can function without some fundraising. So
right,
doing
right.
our due diligence there to make sure we can do this more is really important to me.
Right.
Yeah. And it's also about, I think, cauterizing the community down there, which is already a pretty good tight knit community. But I know that for at least in our experience in doing outreach and stuff like that in a more general market, that, you know, people struggle silently, mm. right? And they don't know how to share that right. they're going through something. And sometimes the last person they're going to share with is their neighbor, right? So I think that's another benefit that I'm hopeful for, is that by exhibiting that, hey, and we have some other guests that are coming who are can provide valuable solutions for anybody who may know someone. And nowadays, when it comes to addiction, you know, if it ain't you and it ain't in your immediate family, you know somebody that's struggling on some level, right?
Right.
With addiction or mental health issues. And there are ways that we can get them help. And so, however, you know, I think cauterizing that community and understanding that, number, and I love what, that you took away the idea of that we're destigmatizing, right? I didn't even consider that that's what one thing we were doing. Mm-hmm. But you get to see, you know, Mitchell living a pretty epic life and giving back and being of service and choosing to operate his business and life in a certain way that allows for opportunities to exist. And hopefully that'll be inspiring to other people and other business owners that they can.
I think it will open the community's eyes, especially in that, you know, in that community, Serenby, because you don't get a lot of people who, I mean, I don't know that city, but I feel like that city is more like the people go there to tour that Serenby place because it's beautiful and the houses are beautiful and, you know.
It's an idyllic community.
Yeah.
And I think we've found a place that's very healing there.
Yeah.
And we want to share that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. It's just so PC.
It's cultivated. It's not what goes through my head.
That's why he's quiet when he speaks, because he's filtering out all of the. All right. Well, look, I think
Wait, hold on. What? So the event.
November 6th.
November 6th.
At 11 a.m.
11 a.m.
Hey, it's your birthday.
What?
Did you RSVP?
Yes.
There's only 18 spots left. You better send them an invite.
No, you are totally invited. You just have to RSVP.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, we'll send it to them.
Yes. So it's November 6th.
Awesome. Yeah.
And at what times?
It's at 11 a.m.
Yes.
There's going to be food.
Yes.
And Mitchell don't play with the food.
Yeah. Who's the caterer?
The chef that helped with my wedding is now in operation of a high-end food truck with gourmet accoutrements. And he will be feeding everybody. And through the generous donations of some sponsors, we're able to offer this event at no cost, so it's not cost prohibitive to anybody who might want to join.
So it's a free event, and I wanted to give a shout out to the caterer who is
Red's Dinner Bell. His name's Jeremy Swafford. He's given us a fantastic rate to support what we're doing. Awesome. Let's not forget to mention that Carter at Cherry Hollow has donated the space, which can be very cost prohibitive for small organizations like ours to utilize, and it's not open to the public. So the fact that we're able to utilize this space is really meaningful.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful place.
One of our premier sponsors is Stone Cottage.
Correct. Stone Cottage has been...
Tell us what Stone Cottage is.
Yeah.
So Stone Cottage is a premier destination in Serenby where groups can come stay and enjoy the beautiful life that we love so much. Mm. And they can book Stone Cottage reservations through the inn. There's a variety of ways to do it, but we are really blessed at TLC to help with their property management. And they really surprised us by stepping in there and helping to make this a reality for us. And we were really humbled by that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So a lot of people will do business retreats or things like that, right?
They've Correct.
Big boardrooms. It's a really beautiful facility right in the heart of Serenby.
Wedding groups can stay there.
Wedding groups.
It's quite a large space.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. And so we've also been, Coweta Force has also signed on as a sponsor of the event too, which I was really happy about because that is a place that I trust to send anyone who needs any kind of assistance and connection of resources, right? And so they've signed on, which is great to have them present because Serenby's not far from them. So that's someone very tangible in the community that anyone can connect to if there is any need that goes beyond what we can facilitate on Sunday.
Yes.
And we're looking for more.
Right.
People to help us to put this event on and also help to continue to tell these kind of stories, right? Because, right. You know, these aren't the, you know, some of these stories that, you know, they know celebrities attached to it, you know. You
except
know?
Quavo.
Huh?
Except Quavo.
We did get Quavo, right? I don't think we got his release on there, but, you know. Yeah, we got Quavo. We got a little cameo. But, you know, these are stories about regular people doing amazing things. And to me, like, that's the salt of the earth. That's the magic. Because that's where the real work gets done. It's that quiet. Those people just do great, good things for people and mm-hmm. and show up day in and day out for others.
Right.
And those are the stories that we tell. And so being nonprofit, you know, we don't play the reality TV show games of fabricating drama. You know, we're trying to tell authentic, true stories and also taking those and sharing that to facilitate a more in-depth conversation.
And it could be educational and in helping end the stigma of addiction. Now, where can we find the link to this event?
Yeah, so you go to mosthighmedia.org/November 6th, NOV 6.
It's on your Facebook page, correct?
It's on my Facebook page. It's okay. On the Most High Facebook page. And yeah, the spots are filling up. So
18 left, so
18 left.
We need to thank the Hawks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we need to thank the Hawks. They, in a very roundabout way, several folks from that organization have made elements of this film possible through multiple meet and greets with Quavo for Charles. And there have been some anonymous donors of tickets that have really made some amazing seats available so that we could be close to where
yeah.
Quavo was. And there's a really amazing guy named Lauren Hijima who donated a very nice series of framed photos that we could get signed for Charles. Mm. The general store at Serenby has been really supportive of Charles. And, you know, we're really grateful for all these people who don't ask for any recognition, but we really appreciate them.
Yes. Yeah. We appreciate all yeah. of them.
So, you know, chop wood, carry water, baby. It's that simple. And November 6th, we're doing this event. And Mitchell is out there. And, you know, he does that too. That's his unofficial slogan for TLC.
And we got to thank my customers. Without people that continue to hire us, none of this would have been possible. And that's probably the most impactful group of people that have made this possible, or people who are willing to pay a premium to hire people who really want to take care of the community and their employees and the land and the environment.
Yeah. All right. Mitchell, thanks for being here with us. This has been an episode of The Most High Show. Thank you for tuning in. Check us out at mosthighmedia.org. Thank you, Jeff, for running the ones and twos. Thank you, Leslie, for the mystic moment. And thank you, David Cliape out in Puerto Rico, living it up big. This has been an episode produced by Most High Media.